Welcome to Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content and pays for it. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, Insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you wherever you may be. This is your host, Bruce Ash, and
Ebb Wilkinson.
Neither of us are on suicide watch, and neither should you be. Welcoming you to a special post-election edition of Inside Track. What a week. Voting in the great 2020 national elections is over, or is it? How is it that huge tranches of votes, nearly all of the votes for Joe Biden, keep showing up while military ballots don't? The counting is ongoing, lots of problems. Counting starts and stops, observers blocked, windows boarded up to prevent any entry or viewing of mailed ballots in dispute over several states. At 9:30 this morning, ABC News and Fox and all the others at about 11 a.m. called the election in favor of Joe Biden and referred to him as the president-elect. Of course, none of these elections have been certified, only certified by them, which is meaningless. And the leftist mobs immediately took over to the streets. I hate to sound like a party pooper, but this election is not over. The fake news media, including the transitioning Fox News, setting the table and collaborating to assume Joe Biden is the president-elect. Is this an effort to squelch resistance, to build up support for the so-called new president and depress 70 million Americans who voted for the president? Why are Democrat districts and precincts almost regularly the ones who have voting anomalies? Why is it we get the vote from Mojave Desert areas or the mountains west of West Virginia sooner than in a Democrat-controlled urban center? Why is it that urban dwellers who are given a chance to vote up to 6 weeks in advance of the election, why do they always seem to be the ones unable to drop their ballot in the mail so that their vote makes it into the hopper by election day or even as prescribed by law? When I first got involved as a political activist, I actually thought elections were fair. But over time, being on the inside of politics, I appreciate what this show's founder, Emil Franzi, told me all the time. And that is that the only ones who think elections are on the level are Republicans. Democrats have been cheating for years, and I fear for the future of our republic if we don't protect the vote. When looking at the entire election, though, the facts are President Trump and the Republican Party had a pretty good election, despite the possible outcome of the presidential. The GOP is going to be well-positioned for success in 2022 and also beyond based on the issues. The polls were wrong, or maybe they were just deliberately made to show President Trump was down by 8 points or 10 points or whatever it was. Polls being used as a form of voter suppression. Pollsters and pundits have done much to create the toxic political environment in our country. Facts are that America is a 50-50 country, very divided, and we have been a divided country for some time, actually, if you think about it, since 2000. Facts are that Republicans picked up several seats in the U.S. House despite being heavily outspent. The Republican Party won 5 seats for sure and perhaps as many as 8 or 9 seats by the time all the results are in. Republicans will also most likely hold on to the U.S. Senate with two runoff elections happening in Georgia in January. In Kentucky, Maine, South Carolina, and North Carolina, the left spent almost $500 million, but they failed to win any of those elections. Democrats, despite sometimes spending $500,000 for a state legislative race that normally would cost $50,000 in Arizona, failed to take control of any new state legislatures, including Arizona. And maybe the biggest win for the GOP in this election was a greater percentage of Latinos, more African Americans, more Jews, more evangelicals, and more young people who supported Republicans than any time in history. Here in Pima County, we witnessed a Trump-deranged Democrat electorate repudiate nearly every single GOP candidate who ran in 2020. And it is heartbreaking that such a great, talented group of GOP candidates were turned away, not because they were flawed candidates, because each of them were very well qualified, but simply because they were Republicans and they were voting against Donald Trump. The most egregious election slimes were against Napier, Ford, and White, who were defeated by a crook, a failure, and a person whose only qualification was that she was a socialist picked by Raul Grijalva. You could certainly make similar connections from county supervisor down to constable. I give kudos to GOP Chair David Eppenheimer and all the very energized Pima Republicans for putting forward a great slate, raising a bunch of dough, and putting together a great strategy. So we Republicans may be licking our wounds today or sometime soon, depending upon the outcome. The presidential counting and fighting, lawyering and all might go on for maybe several weeks to come. When the 2020 election is over, we will dust ourselves off, learn from our experience, and get ready to take back the U.S. House in 2022. Elect a conservative to replace China lover Mark Kelly. Remember, he's only in office for the next 2 years. Build on our state majorities because we have redistricting. Hopefully, we'll be successful with that. And elect a Republican Secretary of State and Governor. We have a jam-packed show for you again today. Starting off today's show on this great fall afternoon, a little spitting on the car coming down to the studio this afternoon, is best-selling author Rod Dreher after the first break. If time allows, we'll break down the Arizona vote, and we'll welcome Washington Times online opinion editor Cheryl Chumley in the second half hour. So listen up. We have another great show for you today on Inside Track. Many thanks to our great Inside Track supporters of many thanks to our great supporters of Inside Track. I'll get that right someday. Gary Imus and my Inside Track partner, Eb Wilkinson at Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Jamie Kipper and her dad, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and the kids from Corazon Cabinets, Joy, Allie, and David. I do business with all of them, so should you. Speaking of Corazon, do you have a home improvement project you want to get started before the holidays, but you're worried if you can afford the luxury you deserve? Corazon Cabinet sells J&K, Conestoga, and Waypoint Cabinets. Call Corazon Cabinets at 488-2266 and schedule a visit to the new showroom at 4700 South Park. It's an easy number to remember, 488-2266. And hey, we have a wonderful announcement to make with a new Inside Track sponsor who has just joined us. And we're very pleased to announce Essential Pest Control supports Inside Track. Essential Pest Control is a local company I have depended upon for all of our business and my own home for over 30 years. Essential Pest Control is an industry leader. They solve all sorts of pest problems, and I trust each of their trained staff in my own home and around our puppies, which says a great deal for the respect I have for my friend Eric Rudin and his crew. He owns Essential and runs such a great company with integrity and a focus on safety and customer service. When we return from the break, we'll welcome New York Times bestselling author Rod Dreher and talk about his newest book, Live Not by Lies. Thanks for listening to Inside Track. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm proud to welcome my good friends at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail to Inside Track as an advertiser. Jamie Kipper and her staff are conservation experts. They sell round and square steel tubing, metal plate and roofing materials, as well as new and used steel, aluminum, and stainless steel to ranchers, artists, interior designers, roofers, and do-it-yourselfers, just like all of the listeners here. Tucson Iron and Metal Retail is open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Tucson Iron and Steel Retail, 701 East 36th Street. Call 520-209-1576 or go to TucsonIronRetail.com. And when you do call, mention this ad and receive an additional 10% discount on their already great prices.
I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. I don't ever want you to be dependent on government ever again. I want you to become financially independent. You will never, ever have to depend on socialist security for your survival. We are here to guide you to financial independence. That's imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce here.
And Eb.
Our guest for the next several minutes is someone you need to hear about. Rob Dreher is a New York Times best-selling author of The Benedict Auction. His new book is titled Live Not by Lies, published by Penguin Random House. It's a very important message that people of faith, really all Americans, need to read. You've probably seen or heard of him on cable and radio shows. Rob Dreher is a senior editor at the American Conservative. He's written and edited for the New York Post, the Dallas Morning News, and the National Review, and his commentary has been published in the Wall Street Journal and the Weekly Standard. He is the best-selling author, as I said, of The Benedict Option, The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, Crunchy Cons, and How Dante Can Save Our Life. But today we're going to talk to him about his new book. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
It's great to be here, Bruce.
Thanks. Rob, as you know, ABC News and others are calling the presidential election. In your commentaries and in the book, Live Not by Lies, you see signs of soft totalitarianism cropping up in America, something more like, as you say, Brave New World than 1984. Identity politics are beginning to encroach on every aspect of life. Civil liberties are increasingly seen as a threat to safety. I can't even believe I'm thinking that or saying that. Progressives marginalize conservative, traditional Christians, and other dissenters. Explain what that might mean in view of the prospect of a Biden presidency.
Right. Well, the thing that gave me the idea for the book, Bruce, was people in this country who had emigrated to America, escaping communism in the Soviet bloc, started to tell me that they're seeing things happen in America that reminds them of what they left behind. And as you mentioned just now, the things that they are that gives them such a sense of alarm. Well, now that Biden has won, he will have the power of the presidency and the executive branch to put behind what they see, and I think they see correctly, as the persecution and prosecution of people of faith and of all conservatives who don't go along with this woke ideology. I think, too, we have to say that so many of us conservatives tend to think that power is only a political thing. But as I found in my research, it's not really the case. In fact, the left has so much institutional soft power in big business, in media, in universities, and so on and so forth. And now they're going to add the executive branch to it. We're in for a real fight.
Rod, we don't know the final outcome of the presidential election. The news outlets think that they declare who the president is, but it is, as we know by law, something that secretaries of state and election bureaus in the 50 states end up doing. But we do know that for a while we've been a 50-50 country, and that's certainly what we are now. What are the risks America faces after this election, irrespective of who is really declared the winner? I mean, what do you see as the specific core issues, the things that are happening in this country that threaten our country's liberty? And speak clearly in terms of people of faith, for starters.
Right. Well, I think what the Democrats and what the left are eventually going to push us toward is some American version of the Chinese social credit system. Now, your listeners may not be aware that in China, they have total tracking of everyone using smartphones, the internet, and all sorts of ways. They keep that data about where people go, who they associate with, and all that in a central database. And they give people a rating, a credit rating. You get a high one if you do everything the government wants. You get a low one if you do things like go to church or associate with deplorable people. This is in China. We have the same capacity here in America right now. Big business has built it. It's not a government thing. It's big business. And as we see big business go more and more to the left to try to shape the way Americans think and who they associate with, I believe that we are going to see the society, these social elites, make it harder and harder for people of faith and political conservatives to participate in the economy if they don't conform. Now, this is something that is happening, Bruce. It was happening even with Donald Trump in office. We don't hear Republicans talk about this a lot, but they're going to have to start doing it. I was encouraged, even though Trump seems to have lost, I was encouraged by the fact that this was by no means a mandate for the Democrats. There's still enough Americans in this country who do not want to be pushed around by the social justice left. We have got to build on that, and I don't think we can let ourselves get hung up in fighting endless fights over whether or not Trump really won or not. I mean, yeah, if there are problems with the balloting, we need to send lawyers in and deal with that. But we got to look ahead to the fights that are coming to us, because these Democrats, now that they're in power, they are not going to stop.
Your book, Live Not by Lies, you advise three things with respect to taking control issue. See, judge, and act. Can you talk a little how people of faith, Christians, and others live in this sort of a world, and what we can do through seeing, judging, and acting?
Yeah, thanks for that. I got that from a man, an amazing man I'd never heard about until I started this research, a priest named Father Tomislav Kolakovic. Father Kolakovic was a Croatian Catholic priest who was doing work against the Nazis in Croatia in 1943. The Gestapo came for him. He escaped and went to his mother's homeland, Slovakia, to continue his work. He told the people there, the Catholic students in the university where he taught, he said, the good news is the Germans are going to lose this war. The bad news is the communists are going to be ruling this country when it's over. They're going to come after the church. We have got to get ready. So what he did was organize student groups who would come together for prayer, but also to study the society around them and everything that was happening, and talk about what they were called to do as Christians to resist. Now, this is where See, Judge, Act comes in. He said it's a simple method. See, meaning look around and talk realistically about what's happening. Judge, meaning to discuss it among yourselves and when come up with a plan, and then act. Go out there and do something in the world to live out your principles. Father Kolakovic got criticized by the Catholic bishops, who told him he was being alarmist. He was upsetting people. But he had studied Soviet communism because he wanted to be a missionary there, and he knew their mindset. Sure enough, Bruce, when the Iron Curtain fell over Czechoslovakia, the first thing the communists did, they came after the churches. But Father Kolakovic's groups, his network, the See, Judge, Act people, they became the backbone of the underground church and the main form of anti-communist resistance for the next 40 years.
Well, Solzhenitsyn famously said that one of the biggest mistakes people make is assuming totalitarianism can't happen in their countries. And you say that many Christians are making the same mistake today.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the chief mistakes we make, and I say this as a conservative Christian, is thinking that if we just get the right people in politically and on with the right judges on the bench, everything will take care of itself. Brother, I am hearing from people every single day, professors in universities who are Christians or political conservatives, who say, you wouldn't believe how frightening it is here. And this is not just in liberal states. These are in red states, too. Those who are on the front lines of where the next ideology, the successor ideology, is being determined, they know what it's like, and they're trying to warn us that we cannot let our guard down. Every single person listening to this has got to be aware of what is planned for us. And I'm not talking tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. These are things that are being done right out in the open, completely legally.
And we see them during this election process, and even outside of the election process itself. If you look at Twitter and Facebook and other electronic means, people whose thoughts that they're expressing are censored by others without any sort of explanation and without any sort of ability to retract.
It's
amazing.
That's going to get worse. Yeah, and it's going to get much worse, because I believe that now that they've won, they're not going to sit back. We're already starting to see some of the left saying that we have got to get rid of Trumpism in America. just yesterday, some people who had been involved in Democratic campaigns at the national level announced the Trump Accountability Project, where they're going to collect names and data about anybody who served President Trump or gave money to him to try to make sure those people never work again. This is totalitarianism, and it's happening right now.
So there's this guy, a former DNC spokesman, and I'm going to goof up his last name, so you may need to correct me, Hari Sevugin, who in a tweet said, "Warning to publishers considering signing somebody who had led a campaign to get Americans to hate each other. You will face a massive boycott led by the Trump Accountability Project. Not just of this book, but of your whole library." This threat is real, and he sounds like a brown shirt to me.
Yeah, there you go. This is the thing I was just talking about. They mean it, and we have seen in the past couple of years that they really can carry this so-called cancel culture out and make good on their threats. We've seen people's book projects canceled because they got on the wrong side of the left. This is not something to be afraid of in the sense that we have to cower in our houses and just hope that they pass us by, but we do have to get organized. Father Kolakowicz knew he had just a few years to organize Christians in Czechoslovakia before the communists took over. I think we're in a Kolakowicz moment here in America, Bruce, where we need to be smart about it, but also resolute, determined to understand what they're planning for us and to build resilience against it. We may not be able to stop it totally, but we can do what these dissidents in the communist countries did and survive it without giving in our integrity one bit.
Hey, Rod, Eb Wilkinson here. You talked about now that Biden has proclaimed victory, true or false, that they're going to go after Trump, anybody worked for him, anybody who gave money for him, and basically prevent them from working again. So you're talking not just the Trump staff, but anybody who's given him money.
Yeah, that's true. And this is where the social credit system aspect of this comes in. In China, they can track you so thoroughly on your phone. They know who you've been socializing with. They know where you've gone and so on and so forth. We can do that here, too. These people are going in our country are going to use the power of surveillance to, and again, things that they can get already on the free market to figure out who our associations are and to punish us for it. I mean, I really hope that the Republicans hold on to the Senate and Senator Josh Hawley and Senator Ted Cruz will carry on with their investigations of big tech, because this is the clearest and most present danger to American liberty we face.
I am so going back to my flip phone.
No, seriously, can I tell you, I was in Prague talking to this older woman. She and her husband had been major dissident leaders under communism. In fact, he went to prison for 4 years. His name was Václav Benda for resisting the government. I noticed that she had a dumb phone on her coffee table, and I asked her why she didn't have a smartphone. She told me that she does not understand people these days, young people mostly, but it includes me. I have a smartphone. She said, people don't realize that the data that we send out there, that we allow these corporations and others to capture, will one day be used against us. She said, if you've lived through what we lived through, you would know that information is power, and there is no way that we can let these people get our data and expect it not to be used against us one day. It sounded a little paranoid to me, but then she pointed on the wall of her apartment where she and her husband had pulled out the wires that the government secret police had put into their apartment under communism to spy on her family.
Wow.
She said, this sort of thing is happening right now over our smartphones, but we're too naive to see it.
And, you know, Rod, it's not just, you know, sort of a social credit leading to the soft totalitarianism that you discussed. And it's frightening, and I agree with what you're saying. I see it myself. But what I also see, all of this data that's on our smartphone or on our laptops being used for, it's all the commercial uses of it as well. These guys, they slice us, they dice us, they go through every sort of machination to understand who we are. And, you know, who does that data go to eventually?
Yeah, it goes to Google, it goes to Facebook and Amazon, but they also sell it on the open market. And this is one of the reasons, or one of the ways, that our old model of totalitarianism fails us now. You know, I'm 53 years old myself. I was raised at the tail end of the Cold War, reading Orwell's 1984 in high school. And so my idea and my generation's idea of totalitarianism is of the all-powerful government, the KGB, the gulags, and so on. But what we're facing now is something much more advanced, where they won't need to send the secret police to our doors to threaten us. They'll be able to do it by knowing everything they need to know about us through what we do online with this data. And major companies have the power, and they're exercising it in some places, to deny us the ability to do business based on the kind of things we support. In the book, I talk about how certain banks have declined to do business with gun manufacturers.
Right.
It's not going to stop with them.
Who do you see the other targets of that type of, is it discrimination? I don't know exactly how to describe it, but who else are a target for those sorts of things?
I think that anybody who stands in the way of the LGBT agenda is going to be targeted, religious schools, religious people, businesses owned by Christians. Mm-hmm. I think also people who object to Black Lives Matter and this new racial politics that has really become a big thing since the George Floyd killing this summer. I mean, this is an incredible thing to me, is to see how this so-called anti-racism has taken over big business. Major corporations, even Halliburton, Dick Cheney's old company, are now mainstreaming this kind of thought in the executive ranks. So if you don't agree to it, then it's going to be very, very hard for you to get ahead in the company.
Well, and major worldwide companies basically held hostage and blackmailed by Black Lives Matter, by other such groups, to give them boatloads of money that they use to continue their activities. Hey, Rod, we have a caller, Lawrence, on the line who wants to chime in. Lawrence, we just have a couple minutes here for Rod before we have to take a break. What do you have to say?
I'll make it quick. Gentlemen, you guys have hit a nerve, as is great process on KVOI. We get a lot of truth, and it hits a lot of nerves. And the nerve you hit was this distrust, and believe me, I have distrust in spades of this budding technology. I'm not scared of it, but I'm suspicious of it. I don't trust it. I don't subscribe to it. I don't have a smartphone. I'm not going to have a smartphone. I have an old flip phone. I know what you're saying, that the data that they're collecting, that they purport to be innocuous or innocent, is anything but. I don't trust it. I don't even have a computer. I'm living in the dark ages, and I'm suffering for it because I cannot take advantage of the technology, but because I don't trust the technology, I don't subscribe to it. I'm between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, but you're free. This is the thing. You're free. And the rest of us are going to have to learn, Lawrence, the wisdom that you live by right now. We're going to have to learn it very quickly. I believe that right now, one of the things that Christians and conservatives, including libertarians, need to do is start building networks of mutual support and even economic trade that is resilient in the face of being cut off from the internet, because that's the thing that we're going to have to do to survive. We can't just sit around and wait for this to happen.
Can I quickly put in a follow-up question?
You bet.
And that was related to my banking system. I'm not going to indicate which bank, but I raised concerns with them, and I said, you know, I'm still writing checks. I'm still using checks. You know, the system wants to eradicate checks. From what I gather, they probably want to eradicate cash. I mean, for that matter, they want to plant a chip in my arm. I'm not going for that either. But my basic question with the bank was, I said, I'm unavailable technologically, electronically. I don't exist. I'm not online. I have no electronic fingerprint or identity. Aren't I safer than most of your clients? And the banker told me, oh, no, I think you're more exposed with your checkbook and your checking account and not being online. His idea was that I was more exposed. I found that counterintuitive.
Lawrence, this is Eb. I will tell you right now, they can't hack a $20 bill.
Yeah.
No, you know, that's true. But this is why in China is almost completely a cashless society. That's what they're headed toward. And the reason they're doing this is because if all commerce is done online, then all it takes is a flick of a switch at Communist Party headquarters to cut somebody off completely from the economy. I'm only slightly exaggerating here with the flick of a switch thing. But as long as we have cash, then we can still exist outside of the electronic economy. But that's why, again, the communists are going cashless, and they're trying to push us here in this country to do it too. During COVID, here at where I live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, it's become harder and harder to use cash. Companies and little tradesmen want us to use the card to make it easier and more hygienic. I get that. But the fact is, if you use your card, you make it easier for them to track you, and you make it, you're contributing to a system that will ultimately disempower us, because, you know, when we're all cashless, then it will be possible. The thing that we all heard about from the book of Revelation about how, you know, you won't be able to buy and sell unless you get the mark of the beast. I used to laugh at that sort of thing as being hysterical. I don't laugh anymore, not after what they're showing us in China.
Live Not by Lies, Random Penguin House. Rod, thanks so much for joining us. I admire you. You speak a truth that really resonated with me. Thank you for your integrity and bravery. I hope people of all faiths and all corners of this country and the world will read your book and listen to what you're saying.
We have to have him back.
Yeah, Rod is probably already working on other projects, so I'm sure there will be opportunities in the future. And thanks so much I really appreciate you, because I reached out to you by email, and normally authors aren't too receptive when they get an email from a random talk show host, but you took it, and I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Bruce. We need each other. We all need each other.
We do.
No matter what our religion, no matter what form of what our politics, if we believe in freedom and if we believe in integrity, we're going to have to figure out how to stand together through all this.
Awesome. Hey, Tom, Rod, thanks very much. Tom, let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. We're a little late for that. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back with Cheryl Chumley.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in, because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Wouldn't it be great if political leaders could create that country again? Learn how to do exactly that, one family at a time, with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. Call me, Eb Wilkinson. imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911, 777-1911.
All right, welcome back to Inside Track. Our guest for the next several minutes, actually until the end of the show today, is Cheryl Chumley. Cheryl is an author, commentary writer, award-winning journalist, and the online opinion editor for The Washington Times. We may have had a mutual friend there, Cheryl, Ralph Hallow.
Oh yeah,
who just passed. One of my dear friends and colleagues. Cheryl's publication credits, we'll get back to Ralph a little later. Her publication credits include The Blaze, Washington Times, of course, Washington Examiner, Heritage Foundation, Heartland Institute. These are all outfits we very much approve of and support. Cheryl has made hundreds of appearances. You've probably seen her on national and local television and radio, including Fox News, C-SPAN, CBN, and Michael Savage. and in person. You do a lot of forums and events. Now, you're also a licensed private investigator, okay?
Wow.
Which I thought was cool when I read. So you just wrote a book, okay? Socialists Don't Sleep, Christians Must Rise or America Will Fail, Will Fall. And it's important to look at how socialism seeds are planted and spread in America and what patriots can do to fight for our individual freedoms. Congratulations on your book. We'll get to the book more in just a second. But if you were called by the president's team to investigate the different election integrity issues that are going on, what would be the first thing that you would do? You're a private investigator.
Well, you definitely can't let this drop, right?
No.
And so I think Team Trump is doing absolutely the correct thing by pursuing the ballot counts where their poll watchers were kept out. That's huge.
Right.
And then when a judge actually ordered that the poll watchers be let in, then the vote counts were the ballot boxes were moved 100 feet away. So
right.
What difference does it make if
right.
your poll watcher's in there? You can't see. So that's huge. And I would also look at some of the reports that I've seen where it says 27,000 votes or 30,000 votes were all cast in one batch, 100% for Biden.
How does that happen?
That's statistically impossible.
I don't know how that happens, and that's something that needs to be looked at. But the larger theme here is that Joe Biden is assuming now that he is elected president, but let's reel back that rhetoric and
right.
look at the truth. The media called him.
Right.
The media called him the president. That means nothing. That means absolutely nothing. So because he has the support of his leftist fawning friends in the media, he's going to try and steamroll past all these investigations. But we need to get to the bottom of this, because if we have election issues that are widespread in America, we need to solve it now. Otherwise, next 4 years, the exact same thing is going to happen again. Only it's going to be even more bold, because the Democrats will have been emboldened by their win this time around, if in fact widespread fraud existed.
Cheryl, Ebb here. What can we do on a local level right now at the basic grassroots local level to start working against this?
It depends on what you believe, right? If you seriously think that fraud took place, then there has to be some sort of protest movement in your community, or at the very least, you can use your voice to resist the narrative that Joe Biden is our next president, because he's not elected yet. Let's not participate in the deception.
Right.
The media has done a terrible job, along with the pollsters, of bringing Joe Biden to the forefront. But the truth is, Donald Trump, actually, he has very slim chance, but he still has a chance through the courts to be reelected. So on your local level, it depends on what your community is. Here in Virginia, where I live, there's not a very active Tea Party presence, but I do know that there are other spots around the nation where Tea Partiers are active, and they are busily assembling crowds so who can show support for Donald Trump. So that's one avenue. Another avenue is, the Republican Senatorial Committee is actively seeking funds. I know some people don't like to support the parties and the formal parties, but they're actively seeking funds in order to help go forward with these protests and these legal challenges. So that's another avenue that you could pursue.
And then, let's take it past the election. Now we're into January, February, March. What do we need to be doing over the next 2 years to prep for the 2022 election? I mean, you're a private investigator. Give us some ideas.
Well, she's more than that. She's a great opinion writer.
Well, I know
that.
This is why I wrote my book, Socialists Don't Sleep, because honestly, in my opinion, we are in the 12th hour in America. You ask very good questions, but the sad, sorry answer is there's nothing that is going to have this immediate overnight effect of bringing this country back to sanity. The reason we're at this place right now in time is because we, particularly, in my opinion, we in the Christian community have been too quiet for too long. So it's emboldened the far left to bring it to this point. So now we have this huge mountain to climb. And what you ask is it goes to the heart of the problem, right? We need to act. We need to act now, but it's going to be hard. So if you're an individual who doesn't like the direction this country is going to head under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, which I hate because make way for the socialism, make way for the lockdowns due to the coronavirus, you're going to have to use your voice however you can. You guys have this radio show, so, you know, mount up and help people activate against this because socialism is coming and we have to be ready for it.
So your book, Socialists Don't Sleep, talks about what Christians can do to help avoid this Armageddon that we're headed toward. Why have Christians, and I'm not just going to limit it to Christians, why have people of faith been so quiet about this? Rod Dreher was our guest right before you came on. He wrote a great new book himself, and we're kind of on similar topics. I didn't start today's show planning it, thinking it was going to be exactly this way, but it is. What can Christians and Jews and other people of faith do specifically in their churches to help build coalitions to prevent the socialist movement that we're currently experiencing?
You're seeing some of it. You're seeing some of what churches can do now, thank goodness. Back a few months when the coronavirus shut down churches, when actually churches obeyed unlawfully issued orders from governors to shut down, right? They stayed shut down until it got to the point where a few of them started asking questions, why are we shut down? Mm-hmm. So there are certain pastors, John MacArthur out in California has been phenomenal on this. There's a guy named Pastor Gibson, Brian Gibson in Tennessee, whom I've interviewed twice, once in person, who has started a campaign to fight back against the government's infringement on freedom of worship and sworn never again will our church doors close. This is key because the last wall to crumble in America before the globalists and collectivists completely take over are the churches, the church communities. So if you want to fight effectively, you have to go through the churches and you have to get your pastor to start getting a little bit more involved in politics and culture. We can't afford as a church community any longer to say, well, we go to church and we live in this world, but not of it, so we don't have to deal with the secular side of things. We as Christians should be running for boards of education in the public school systems. We shouldn't be just simply in our own private Christian schools. We need to get in the public school systems. We should have teachers in there. We should have more political offices that are filled by Christians and conservatives and Judeo-Christian Americans, people with a real understanding of limited government, rights coming from God, not government. We need more people like that running and winning at our local levels, our local political offices, to make these fights where it really hits, in your own backyard.
So I'm going to get to Brian Gibson again in just a second, but I kind of failed to reemphasize the original question I'd asked you on why Christians and Jews and other people of faith did fall asleep with the switch. What was it? I mean, was it just this reluctance to think that socialism could overtake our country? What was it exactly? Why did everybody sleep?
I do address this in my book, and you know, the part of the reason is that Christians, like everybody else, Jewish people, like everybody else, wants bigger cars, bigger homes, 401k. So we have gotten involved in the materialism that America and America's freedoms bring. Right? We haven't been as maybe good with our priorities as we ought to. So there is that secular side. But the bigger reason that I found is that a lot of churches are actively teaching that socialism is, if Jesus were to pick a political system, that socialism is the preferred politics of Jesus. And they come out of their schools, they come out of their seminaries teaching that social gospel into their churches, and congregations buy into this. And it's this skewed teaching that we have that we're battling within our own church community, that has really torn down a lot of these free market capitalism, individualism walls.
You know, I hate to call out anybody specifically, but Pope Francis, I'm not going to criticize him. He is a man of faith. But what he has done working with the Communist Chinese Party and cutting deals, I know that he rationalizes it. I'm sure that he wants to have his ministry go on in the Communist China area. But Cheryl, you have to admit the things that he has done, the sacrifices, the deals he's made to do this. What does that say about the Catholic Church today?
And not just today, because I actually have a chapter in my book on this too, yeah, tracing some of this, you know, going through the Catholic Church and what popes at various points in history, popes have fought communism, but they've also embraced it and worked with communists. So.
Right.
These are horrible truths that you have to realize. And the thing about today's Pope is, okay, he's a man of faith, but that doesn't give him the right to denounce America's capitalistic system.
Right.
That doesn't give him the right to wade into U.S. politics and wag his finger at Americans,
right,
for not participating,
right,
in the climate justice program of the far left. And this is where we are headed, though, in America with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Everything that the Pope has put out there for the far leftist agenda, it's going to be embraced in America. And this is what we have coming to fight.
Yeah. Cheryl, we have a caller. We haven't heard from Mark in a while. I think it's the Mark that we know and love. Mark, you have a comment or a question for Cheryl Chumley?
Yes, I do. Well, I hope I am that Mark.
You're that anyway, Mark. I love you, man.
Mark is back.
Oh, I love you too. You're fantastic, and I never miss, if at all possible, your show. And anyway, so I do have a couple things to say.
You always do. Go ahead.
I'm getting a little choked up here. Two of my grandfather's sisters were liberated, released out of Theresienstadt, and most people don't even know what that is. Theresienstadt was a concentration camp during the Nazi era. And, of course, they shouldn't have been there, but nobody should have been there. And nobody ever thought that that would ever happen in Germany, one of the greatest countries on Earth after World War, you know, it was a very modernized country. Anyway, but it did. And that kind of thing can happen here, too. Nobody thinks it will happen here. And you're talking about the total cultural canceling of conservatives and our entire, livelihoods and our lifestyles and our way of life. And we have to not sit back and accept this. Oh, well, this has happened, and wait 2 years and see what happens again. We have to be out there every day fighting against these leftist, National Socialist American Workers Party, Leninist,
Black Lives Matter, Antifa.
Leninist, right, the fascist, Black Lives Matter, fascist, Antifa, all of these, not even the Popotist and the, they're all supporting all those communist, totalitarian regimes, and they like that, and they see how they can have the power. With the leftist Democrats, it's always about power, getting power to put up more Democrat than any other organization of negative consequences. It is never about service.
Cheryl,
let's
talk, because Mark raises a good point. Socialism isn't really about power to the people. It's about power to the few who run the governments and control those people, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And actually, Mark made a bunch of good comments. I enjoyed listening
does.
To him. socialism is completely opposite what America was founded on. If you had to look at if you had to summarize what makes America great and why America is so much better than any other nation in the world, it's this. It's the fact that in our country, our individual rights come from God, not government.
That's right.
And that's what it is in a nutshell, right? And all problems stem from that, stem from flipping that and putting God in a subservient role, or taking God from the public stage entirely and leaving that void for government to come in.
Which the Democrats did three times in the 2016 election.
Which they actively, they do that all the time.
Right.
They try and disguise the intent. But the ultimate end game here is for God to be removed from all things public, God to be removed from importance in America, and then government to become the new God. That's the end game of the left. Mm. And it's not just to cripple America. It's to basically have this big, huge government that controls the people of the world. I mean, it's not just stealing America's sovereignty. It's stealing individual freedoms that we have in this country. But it's ultimately this huge elitist bureaucratic plan to just shepherd everybody into a system that is easily controlled. And America, thank goodness, still has the church community, because the first thing that goes, or the last thing that goes, actually, in communist countries is the churches, right? It's not coincidental that communist countries are usually atheist, because the government can't compete with God, and the government does not want to compete
with God.
That is a great,
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say what you just said quite the way you did. Governments cannot compete with God. Oh my God, that is prophetic. What a great statement.
Cheryl Ebb here.
And that's the fight, right?
Yeah.
That's why we have to make the fight that way.
It is. Now, with Joe Biden claiming that he is the president-elect, take it or leave it, you've got Kamala Harris under there, extreme progressive socialist. You've also got Bernie Sanders and AOC. How much input are they going to have in this new regime if it takes place?
We got 2 minutes.
Well, Bernie Sanders was whispered for labor secretary, which, if you picture him in charge of the nation's business, you don't even need me to explain the repercussions
from that.
We got
the picture.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, if she's elevated to any kind of administrative position, oh boy, just wait for all the loud mouth, the chiding and scolding of American individual freedoms, and just the crippling of whatever she puts her fingers on, because she's more than happy to turn this country into blazing socialism. Elizabeth Warren is talked about as well. Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan, the governor.
Cruella.
I mean, there's a tyrant.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch out for that. But, you know, the good news here is, first off, the Senate, right? These people have to be confirmed through the Senate. And right now, Republicans still are holding the majority in the Senate. The second good news is there is a band of attorneys general, the Republican Attorneys General Association, that have been doing war games for months now in case of a worst-case scenario, Biden-Harris winning. And they've come up with game plans how to protect individuals in their states from the onslaught of the unconstitutional regulations.
Cheryl, we got to go. We're up against the clock. We love you. We want to have you back on the show. Socialists Don't Sleep, What Christians Can Do to Prevent a Takeover.
Thanks. Get the book.
Get the book. And look, until next week, for my co-host, Ebb Wilkinson, this is Bruce Ash. Asking all of you to keep the faith, have a very pleasant good afternoon, and know that this fight is far from being over. Jamie Kipper and her father, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal, what are they going to see when they come through the gates?
So when they come on in, they'll see our building up front. People have free rein to then go out and look in the yard. So it's not a typical scrapyard with a ton of big machinery. We have a couple of forklifts around, but that's about it, just to help move material. So when you come in, it's all organized by material, whether it's square tubing, angle iron, roofing, and then there is a pile in the back, which is still organized and easy to get through, but that's stuff that comes over from the scrap. So we're unique in that we get stuff in from the scrap, which a lot of artists and people will like or reuse, whether it's a sink that someone needs for their house, We sell literally anything made of metal.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. I don't ever want you to be dependent on government ever again. I want you to become financially independent. You will never, ever have to depend on socialist security for your survival. We are here to guide you to financial independence. That's imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911. That's 777-1911.